Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 268. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Hey, that's twangy, baby.
Twangy.
That's twangy.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
And our buddy, that is twangy.
And our buddy Tim Elliott is sleeping in California somewhere. I think he had client stuff going on, so he's up there in the wine country. And he probably
2 hours
was,
earlier.
Yep, he's probably sampling a little bit last night. And
and not spitting it out like he's supposed to.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how about this rainy weather? We got 3 rainy Saturdays in a row.
Wait till
it's
next
getting
week.
Depressing.
Next week is going to be a thunderstorm alley all week.
Oh, geez. So
they say?
Yeah.
Fridays have been gorgeous, though. You know, maybe we should change the what's a weekend day. And
yeah,
I think a lot of people who were smart took off and did nice outdoor things yesterday. It was like perfect.
Can we do that? Do we have the power to do that?
Sure. When you're self-employed? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Take off whenever you want, Phil.
Thanks.
Tell them I said so.
Sweet.
Oh, man.
Sweet.
So were you stuck inside all day at Coco yesterday?
Of course.
Oh, that's too bad. It was gorgeous outside.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, you can't exactly look out the windows there.
Well, if you're really tall,
yeah, you
like Phil.
Why can't you?
He can reach those round tops if he stands on his desk.
Oh, yeah, you can look out the windows.
You know,
yeah, there's windows.
You know what I think is cool is how they've started to use the board. You know,
yeah,
the little trading board.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of cool.
That's what happens when you surround yourself with guys that have the technology to actually make things work. That, you know, they've hacked that thing into to do all sorts of great stuff, whether it's the Twitter feed or posting, you know, the agenda or you know what events are coming up and things like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's very, very cool.
It's one of the things that makes that place so special. You know, it's just so unique of a space.
Yep.
And that place was busy the last time I was in there, too.
When was the last time you were there?
Well,
it's been a long time since I've seen you.
Yeah, like a week or more. I haven't been getting in there every week per my membership benefits. But the last time I was in, I couldn't believe the activity going on. It's like every meeting room had a formal meeting going on in it, and there was just a lot of bustling and stuff going on. Is it like that every day now? Or
yeah, pretty much. It's well, Friday was a little slow, but
yeah,
it was a nice
Fridays,
day. And
yeah.
Just so if everybody's wondering why Phil's audio is going in and out, it's because he's doing his expenses.
I'm tidying up. My apologies.
Well, you're a multitasker. What can
I'm
I
trying
say?
To multitask, and I can't stay as close to the mic as I want.
Yeah. So. Well, we should probably stop commiserating and actually get on with the show, eh?
What? And talk about stuff that people would really give a crap about?
That's right.
Yeah, what?
There you go.
Why would we ever do that?
What a concept. Well, I'll start. I got my hand raised.
Get out of town.
I will. In fact, I did a post about this in the Internet of Things category. Verizon Wireless had their Connected Tech Tour Minneapolis stop.
Yeah, what? Tell me about that. Week. How come we didn't all get to participate in that?
Because I'm special, I guess.
I guess you are.
Yeah.
I guess you are.
You're the IoT man.
Well, I got a last minute invitation
from the Marooge.
No, from
Karen
Smith.
Yeah,
at Verizon, and said, you know, she apologized for not inviting us, and it just was one of those spur of the moment things. And I said, sure, you know, I can actually move something around and show up. So I did.
And, all right.
You know,
so what did they have to share with you?
So, you know, most of these kinds of events are all about promoting.
Sales.
Yeah. It's all about promoting what they're doing and so on. And so, you know, I was hoping for a lot of new things. The keynote speaker is a guy named Jack Aldrich. And he's, they build him as a global futurist and best-selling author. And he basically gave an overview of the IoT market. And what I wanted was stats and facts, you know, so what's happening with the size of the market, adoption rates, you know, et cetera, who are the big players in it? What are the projections? Those sorts of things sprinkled in with anecdotal things. And it was pretty basic. So, you know, about halfway through, I'm thinking, come on, seriously, you know, let's step it up a notch. But then what I realized, he got into essentially the motivation. So this is obviously the whole point, the motivation of driving the audience toward realizing what was happening and the fact that IoT was going to be an exponential growth kind of thing. And it turned out to be a pretty good talk. But what was really interesting, like always, is going out and schmoozing with the booth, with the vendors in their booths, and the things that I learned were just amazing.
What kind of vendors were there?
Well, I mean, everybody from Lucent to Digi to software partners, anybody that's working with Verizon's machine-to-machine, their M2M initiatives, and it's really business-focused, so it's, you know, transportation stuff, it's supply chain things. Lucent was showing these, I don't know if you guys have heard about these little microcells.
I don't know.
In like cell phone technology?
So AT&T, for example, drives their truck up to a venue, you know, like Target Field. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden there's another, you know, 10,000 connections that can be mm-hmm. made to AT&T cell system.
Well, that was back in the day, that was known as a cow.
Oh, really?
A cell site on wheels.
Oh, I didn't know. I never even knew that.
Yeah.
Huh. Never heard
that. They would bring that into, you know.
Cell on wheels. Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Cell site. Like big venues for like ball stadiums.
Yeah. You know,
like
big
that.
One-day events and things like that. You know, yeah. You would bring it to a site.
Okay.
But that was back when my wife was working in the cell industry for Verizon, which was, gosh, many, many moon ago.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, now they're calling them microsites.
Well, no. What it is, you know, for example, in my home, I'm in, our development is in just a little bit of a depression between two lakes. And so as a consequence, I have to go up
the
second floor
over there.
Yeah, I know. It's a bummer.
It's the depressed part of Eden Prairie.
All right. Anyway,
it's the slum of Eden Prairie.
That's right. So anyway, the cell signals aren't that great. I got to go up to the second floor sometimes to get a good cell signal if the internet's out or whatever. It's usually not a big deal, but what they can do is actually put in these microsites in areas that don't have really great coverage. So for example, they could stick a microsite antenna over on Mitchell Road, right in the center of our development. And all of a sudden we'd go from 1 to 2 bars to 5 bars. And all it's doing is it's essentially creating a mesh network. So it's connecting up to the primary tower and essentially just boosting the power of the signal. And it's really pretty interesting. So that apparently, according to the Lucent guy, is becoming a way that most of the major providers are covering cities, for example, you know, where you'll have dead zones. And so they're going in and they're putting in a little micro antenna into a dead zone. And all of a sudden it's no longer a dead zone. So it's just some pretty interesting technology. But also, one of the guys from Digi, we talked at length, and one of the things that I was really interested in is the ability to use the mobile network as failover and redundant connections. So if your primary internet goes down and you've got, you know, you're a healthcare startup and you have devices in the home that are mission critical to track someone's health, if their internet connection goes down or they can't afford it or whatever, then it can fail over to the mobile. And these guys were talking about how it's actually the mobile's the primary, and battery backup for the mobile connection is actually really easy to do. And it's really hard to do with, you know, plugging in a primary modem, because the battery connection battery backup will only last for an hour. So some really interesting things that I learned about what's happening with infrastructure stuff and low power RFID tags for supply chain and things of that nature. And so it's going to be fun to watch this space grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Beyond the consumer stuff. Like, it doesn't sound like there was like Honeywell probably wasn't there. Or
no,
you didn't get into the consumer IoT kind of.
No, it was stuff. More. Yeah, it was more mid-sized business to enterprise stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So even though obviously all of them, pretty much all of them have some consumer level solutions.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Working on that. So.
Yeah. Huh.
So did anybody go to this Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Awards event?
No, I wasn't aware of it. Where did they do it and when?
You know what? It was at the Hyatt, and it was Wednesday night.
Hmm.
And 25 finalists, 19 of them from Minnesota, were trying for this year's award. And so we have Matt Dornquist from Code 42 and Chip and Zach from Jamp Software, and Scott Libman and Dan Allen from Magna 360. And there's some property management company, Renters Warehouse. Never heard of them.
Oh, yeah.
Never
right.
heard of them. Yeah. Small little startup.
I'm ready to kill that outfit every time I turn on my radio.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. Go away.
Now.
You don't want to
now
rent
he's
furniture?
Getting a, now he's getting an award.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a man that knows how to, it's a guy who knows how to use media. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I know it drives you crazy. But
cheap radio, baby. Yeah.
It's not as cheap as it used to be. Yeah. Thank God for that.
Well, you know what I discovered? We could do a live show on Saturdays on WCCO. The only kicker is we actually have to pay
you
for
pay
that
for
hour.
It.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so.
Yes, it's true. Well, that's how most talk radio stations make money on the weekends, because talk radio is not a destination on the weekends. It's
oh, really?
Pretty much a weekday sort of a thing. So you bolster your revenue by selling big chunks of time. So that's when you get all your financial planning shows and your
right
other real things. Estate. So, yeah.
So, but that's just, you know, there a while back, AM radio sort of made that choice of do we continue, you know, the brand of the radio station during the weekend and hold true to the programming goals and that sort of thing, or do we just make money? And they kind of decided to go with the make money piece. So
yeah, well, that's always a positive.
Yep. So
how much is an hour?
It depends. Yeah, it really depends on what time of day it is. And yeah,
okay. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
It can be as little as $10. It can be as much as, you know, 10,000. So
sure.
Early Saturday morning, like we do, is probably kind of cheap.
Actually, Saturday morning and Saturday during the middle of the day, or is known in the radio business as the midday, is usually the best on the weekend.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anywho, enough of this radio banter. We're a high-tech show, for God's sake.
That's right. let's talk about Medtronic wanting to implant sensors in everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's just crazy talk. That's what that is.
I can't believe it. Even though the rectal thermometer implant would be, no, I'm kidding.
It's a nice little break in the day is what that is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. As long as it vibrates. Anyway, but they are really, at some medical design and manufacturing conference, Medtronic described their efforts to miniaturize all their cardiac technologies and doing pill-sized pacemakers and things of that nature. There seems to be a lot of pill-sized technologies that are being driven forward, especially stuff like, instead of a colonoscopy, you swallow a big pill.
With a little video cam in it.
And eventually pass it, and it records everything. At least hopefully you pass it. It doesn't create an intestinal blockage. You have to have surgery.
We got to go in after it.
That's right. So
yeah. Well, that's a little different one than what Medtronic is doing, though.
Right. I mean, I'm kidding.
That was the headline on that story in IEEE Spectrum is kind of crazy, though. I don't know that they're really
that's not their direction.
Proposing to put them in everybody, but they certainly are miniaturizing a lot of their products. And they will have application. I mean, they make sense for a lot of patients. You know, maybe the more high risk ones that can't undergo, you know, traditional surgery.
Right.
But it's pretty exciting stuff from our local med tech leaders.
Well, and you know what's interesting is my doc, who I've seen for 26 years, he and I just, you know, shoot the bull whenever we're in there. And whenever I come in, he always says, okay, so what's the next big technology thing? And we laugh, and then I have to tell him something. So I have to come up with something.
There's this thing you're talking to, you crank it, and you talk to somebody named Sarah, and they connect you with somebody else.
That's right. Yeah. They're, instead of rotating the dial on the phone, now you can just push the buttons.
Right.
He's always looking for new solutions and new methods and all of that, even though I think the guy's probably like 65. But one of the things that we talked about when I went in for my physical in March was how I would pay for a sensor that would be on me that would constantly monitor my blood. So if there are any aberrations, it could look at any aberrations and say, oh, you know, your white blood cell count's up. Or, you know, this is happening or that's happening. And now there's some studies that have been out about one of the great ways to reboot your immune system is to fast for 3 days. Drink water, eat nothing. And they're looking at this for seniors to be able to reboot their systems. Also people that are under cancer watch or are on chemotherapy or something. It's a great way to bolster their immune system. There's something in the body that apparently it really reboots and starts things up again. And so wouldn't it be great to have a sensor on you that would say, oh, by the way, fast, you know, for 3 days, and then give you feedback that yes, it's working, or be able to talk to your clinic and they have a web service that would be able to follow up on that sensor and say, hey, there's some other stuff going on. You better come in and have this checked. I would love that.
Well, isn't that sort of the promise of where
that's the promise.
Apple Health Kit is going? And
well, yeah, but you know, you need somebody like a Medtronic that's got all the clinical experience and sales experience and regulatory hoops they have to jump through.
Well, it's interesting you'd bring that up. I mean, how long is it going to be before the technology giants and devices like Medtronic are jumping into apps as Mayo and some of the others are doing now with HealthKit.
Well, you know, that's a great point because an Apple, for example, even with all their money, couldn't hire enough people and have enough institutional knowledge about the medical space or healthcare space to be able to go in and do it all themselves. So they've got a partner with a health organization, and that really is at the root of what the Apple and Mayo thing is all about. Yep. Who posted this in the show notes about this Fast Company? By the way, I'm loving Fast Company.
Yeah.
God, the design and the exist and the create sections are really awesome.
Yep. They are. They do an excellent job.
Oh my God.
Yeah, well, I originally tweeted that story about a week ago.
We briefly talked about the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah, we talked about the piece, but not this. This is a really good article.
Yeah, yeah, I thought this was the one that got into the details the best. And you know, they apparently Mayo Clinic's been working with Apple for a couple of years now. They've obviously just been keeping it quiet and continue to keep it somewhat quiet.
Yeah.
I think they're calling it more like a framework, the Apple Health Kit thing and allows other apps to, other organizations' apps to, interact with their system and share their data. And, you know, the interesting thing about this is Mayo's getting most of the attention, but the other company that's been partnered with this, the other significant company, is Epic Systems out of Madison, which is the leader in electronic health records They're like the 800-pound gorilla.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So we got Minnesota and Wisconsin at the forefront of this whole Apple healthcare health kit thing. And, you know, it's interesting when you said earlier, Steve, that Apple can't have, you know, staff up with their own medical people. You'd find it interesting to know, I think, that they do have a chief medical officer now. A guy well,
I've seen that. I've seen they've been doing recently. A bunch of hiring.
They call him Bones.
This is a physician. I guess I forget his name, but I actually know somebody who's chatted with him and had known him before. He went to Cupertino, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes here. And of course, people were scrambling to understand and learn more about who's involved on at Mayo Clinic, and it's actually very hard to find out. Although another story came out that named a vice president or something down there that was commenting on it, but you know it's secretive, as you would expect. And even some people down in Rochester that I was trying to find out more from didn't know. A guy I know that runs the BioAM meetup group down there, he works for Mayo Clinic, and even he couldn't find out who the people were involved, you know. So, but they do have iOS developers down there that are obviously involved in this. And you know, it'll come out over time more and more, I think, what's going on with this whole thing. But it's early days yet.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was part just really a great announcement to make at their WWDC event that Tim Cook himself made.
Well, and you know what? I just have to throw this in because this happened twice to me at this Verizon event, where I'm talking to enterprise class hardware and software developers and companies that are making products for supply chain, for example. And both of them talked about HomeKit and HealthKit in the context of the Internet of Things, and talking about what a great direction that is, and that there was great hope for what was going to happen at Google I/O with respect to
Google Fit. Well, did you see the announcement about Google Fit? They're trying to do the same type of thing.
Yeah. Well, when is Google I/O, by the way?
Soon. A couple weeks,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But before the end of the month.
But that there was a great deal of expectation around what would happen with Android specifically.
Excuse me. It's next week, 25th and 26th.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we're getting near the end of June already. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like now they've got to have their event and try to, you know, compete.
Well, they'll probably announce all the things that Apple beat them to.
Right.
Of course, they don't have to worry about, you know, announcing Drive. They've already done that, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was you know, be interesting to see what comes out of I/O. It's always a good time. You know, I meant to tell you guys, I stopped at, I was over at the Apple store in Uptown, for their business division's overview of WWDC. I thought I would sit in on that.
Oh man, I would have gone to that.
Yeah. Pash was was our friendly host and presenter. So, it was, you know, it was really, I don't think it was anything that, you know, all of us didn't know about, or those that follow Apple closely, you know, didn't know about, but it was interesting to see the presentation that was really slated towards those business customers, those folks that have, you know, 1,000 iPhones, you know, in their workforce and things like that. So it was an interesting viewpoint. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine our friends at Jamf Software have been talking a lot about it too. I would surely think, as far as the enterprise implications.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Apple and the enterprise, yep.
Yep.
In fact, I saw a newsletter come through from them, an email newsletter just yesterday or the day before. It will open up a lot of new exciting things for them, I'm sure.
So anyway.
Who put the notes in here about Kitizen? I don't really know Kitizen.
You weren't aware of them? They were.
Oh, my Kittison, goodness.
Didn't Kittison, weren't they part of that Beta MN, Graham? Didn't they have a location there? I think they did.
They did, yes. Yeah. They've been everywhere, actually.
That's right. We talked about these guys.
Yep. You know, yeah. They pitched at MobCon. That guy that they brought in to be their CEO really seems to be on top of things and has really, I think, revitalized that company. They've raised money and really changed the whole model and offering of the company.
Oh yeah,
it went from
Itizen to Kittison.
Itizen to Kittison.
Yep.
Yeah. And this latest article just came out a couple days ago. Minneapolis company tapping into the busy world of used kids' clothes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. The founders, Dory Graff and Mary Fallon, started this company. But when they brought in the new fella, and his name is escaping me right now, they adopted this new business model. But yeah, I think I haven't really followed this closely lately. But they added, did they add some new wrinkle here? Well, I don't know that they added something recently here, but yeah, used kids' clothing is apparently a big business, and you know it has been in the past. I mean, you guys obviously are aware of Once Upon a Child.
Oh yeah, we used to buy
franchise
and sell their
stores. Yeah,
when the kids were younger.
They've been going strong for a long time. So in essence, it kind of looks like these folks put it online, and it's really taken off. So yeah. Good for them.
Yeah. I think it was a nice piece. It's always good to see articles that are, you know, give you a little insight. So, yeah. But yeah, I don't think there was anything new and earth shaking there.
In that article, we knew about what they were doing, and but they were asked to present at Google's demo day earlier in the year. Apparently, they got to go to some national event. That isn't a local Google event. That was... You know, they were invited to go somewhere and do that, maybe out to the Bay Area. That was
the Google presentation. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Google Demo Day. And Steve Case presented them with a $100,000 check to grow their business. There you go. That's couch cushion money for him. They'll take that, baby.
Look what I dropped this morning.
Yeah.
You take it. Go ahead.
It just goes to show you that every quote-unquote tech startup locally isn't necessarily about really high-tech stuff. You know, this is an old problem that they've, you know, streamlined via an online mobile app, and it's working very nicely for them. So good deal for them.
Well, so this article about, or really blog post in Healthcare MN about Health Data Palooza.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about this event.
Well, I've got to tell you, I'm getting involved more in healthcare and certainly big data. And I wasn't totally aware of it either, but it's a pretty big deal, I guess. And Thompson Adorinkamy was invited to present at the event. He and the co-founder of healthcare.mn, Pete Kane, who I've gotten to know pretty well. I was down in Rochester, an event that BioAM did this week, and rode down with Pete. And I had seen that same day that he and Thompson were featured on McKesson.com, which is a pretty big, you know, pharmaceutical company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were writing about what these guys are doing here in Minnesota, the home of healthcare and med tech, big center for both. And then lo and behold, and Pete mentioned something about, you know, how Thompson had been invited to present at this fairly big event for data geeks in the healthcare field. And he came back and wrote a very interesting post about what he took away from that event. And it's worth a read for anyone interested in the transformation of healthcare and how startups, he thinks, and apparently the participants of this event agreed, it's the startups that are going to make the changes happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not the establishment that's going to, you know, and we hear this all the time, that the big companies can't innovate, you know, and they're looking, all of them are looking for ways how they can innovate beyond their four walls, you know, and they're all trying to partner up with startups, or they're trying to grow startups internally. You know, United Healthcare has a big initiative in that regard. Well, big, it's a, you know, internal Skunk Works kind of thing called the Garage, in the Optum, division. And, you know, all the big companies are trying to figure out, how do we do innovation by partnering with others? And those others are increasingly startups and entrepreneurs. So anyway, I think Thompson's post is definitely worth a read, because it's very thoughtful, and he recapped at least four or five, you know, major takeaways that I think will open a lot of people's eyes. So yeah, keep your eye on those guys and healthcare.mn. And Treehouse, one of my clients, is doing, you know, interesting things in the area of innovation as well with healthcare startups here in the state. So yeah, kind of neat.
Cool. Well, let's talk about some of the other big stories this week. And probably one of them is Steve Borsch is seriously looking at Android devices.
Oh, yeah, what's up with that? Well, that really kind of concerns me, to tell you the truth.
Well, so, because we're going to be
that's scary.
We've got a trip to Rome this year, and the four of us are going, and all of our phones are locked, and AT&T won't unlock them. And even though I can illegally unlock them, I'm not going to, because I don't want to get kicked off the network or get sued. And so I've started looking at Blue, BLU phones, Android phones, and some of them are really pretty amazing for unlocked, for, you know, anywhere from $59 for a piece of garbage to $300 for nice phones. Micro Center's got a whole section of these. Well,
why don't you just get a piece of garbage? Because if you're just going to go for, you know, a vacation, why buy a really nice phone?
Well, it's what I'd like to do is I'd like to get something that Michelle could use when she travels internationally.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
And so one of the things that, so I'm looking at that, and I'm looking at Android tablets that have cell connections, and those are, there's really no advantage. I may as well just buy an iPad mini. But to buy an iPad mini with a cell connection, a 64 gig like I've got now, you know, I'm going to spend $700 or more. Oof, I'll have to buy accessories and everything else. Which is just a crazy maker. But this whole thing about data internationally, I'm sorry, it's still so broken. I'm considering doing is getting a device that I can put on the T-Mobile network. They have, just so you guys know, and so everyone knows, T-Mobile has a program, and they don't want you just to sign up for a month and then quit. But you can sign up for a month and then
and then quit.
But you can use data and text messaging internationally. So you pay $50 a month.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
contract.
I've heard about this.
You bring your own device. You can use the T-Mobile network here in the U.S., which, you know, isn't that great. You know, it's number four behind Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint. Sprint really gets slammed. This plan, then you can go to something like 120 different countries and use data plan. Even though, fun fact to know and tell, there is a voice over IP restriction on these data plans in a lot of countries. I did not know that until I was reading TripAdvisor, and people were saying, okay, that sounds great, you know, but here's the punchline.
So you wouldn't be able to Skype us, is what you're trying to say?
Well, you'd have to get, there's a voice over IP rider that you have to get for the data plan. It's like another 10 bucks or 10 euros, excuse me. Hmm. And so, you know, it's almost like you need a PhD in you know, cell phone telephony or whatever to figure this all out.
So will we be able to do a podcast with you from the Vatican, or?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Just you know, I should, the, I should pop into the Pope's podcast.
Well, I was just going to say, I should send a note over there and see if we can do a podcast with the Pope.
Get him on as a guest. What the heck, baby?
Absolutely. I got some questions for him. Like what's he hiding in the Vatican archives that he doesn't want the world to see?
Yeah. Oh my God.
Get a little transparent.
Angels and Demons comes out here.
Hey, I was born and raised Catholic.
Yep.
And so
aren't we all just covering Catholics?
I got a little, I got a little street cred with Catholicism. But anyway,
I was an altar boy. So there.
Oh my God.
Seriously? Wow.
I was an altar boy in a rather progressive Catholic church. It was a, it was a church ministry. So it was, wasn't raised, not a, a church ministry, a college ministry. So fairly relaxed, but I know when to ring the bell.
Huh?
Hey, there you go.
Dominus Vobiscum, et cum spiritu tuo.
See, now there you're dated, dude. Cause I didn't have anything to do with Latin.
God, for those of us, for those of you listening that are not Catholic and have never been to a mass, the old Latin masses, I remember being a kid and when the priest would do, Dominus Vobiscum, et cum spiritu tuo, I would think, something else like, Dominus Vadi Mecum, because it was a toothpaste my dad used, and, just coming up
Dominus,
with something else. And
Dominus Deliverus.
I have never been so bored in my life as I was from between the ages of like 8 and 14. Oh, man. Then my mom and dad, after that, let us stand in the back so I could.
It's not really not that much better in English. So.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all form over function. Anyway, so the buzz about our pals at Apple seems to be growing. This article, I don't know who found this, about Apple doesn't get the cloud era is officially over. And I think that's kind of a leap in a way because
It's interesting. I mean, do you guys really think that this was a big change for, if you read into that article, you also feel like they're saying this is a brand new company. Apple is a new company. They're changing. They're more open. They're more pragmatic. That sort of, do you think this was really that big of a change for them?
Yeah, I do. I think that they did so many things concurrently that are, when I'm seeing some of the Android people I follow that are developers who just are constantly ripping Apple and having them say, just about everything I pissed and moaned about with Apple has been fixed. When you start to read stuff like that, it's like, whoa. It's if people's heads are being turned that have never allowed their heads to be turned in the past, it does say something. Now, it's all about execution. It's all about what they do. It's all about what kinds of things they deliver. But they seem to be creating this layer above what they do that is more open and more accessible, especially to developers. And it may very well accelerate what they're doing. So
The only thing that's left for them to piss and moan about is Apple Maps, apparently. They won't let up on that. Of course, they're probably right.
Bad.
It's a piece of crap.
Yeah,
but they got to bitch about something. I guess,
just so. Use what works. So that's all there is to it.
Yeah,
that's right. What I thought was so funny was when we were talking about Apple HealthKit. Did you hear about the Australian startup that said, "Wait a minute, that's our name."
Our name,
HealthKit.
That's
and
right.
It's like they could have Googled us, and so I tweeted. Yeah, but Apple doesn't use Google.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, they really don't now. They're using Bing now. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
exactly.
And it ain't on Bing, maybe. I don't know. Right. But anyway, Apple is Apple and the Apple and Google rivalry continues in earnest, I guess.
I think that there are some really interesting metamorphosis in sort of underway at Apple, but I don't know if they've necessarily changed. The big thing that I always, every time I watch Tim Cook or any of the guys from Apple on stage, I think, they're trying really hard, but they're just not as hip as Steve.
No.
they're just not as hip.
They don't have the, I'll tell you though, Federighi, that guy, what do they call him? The hair guy, you know, he's pretty smooth on stage, that guy.
Yeah,
but the man hung up on his mother.
Yeah, right.
That was all for show.
Yeah. I know, but still, it's like, don't hang up on your mom. Say, hi, mom, I'm busy right now. I love you too. Bye. That's going to endear you to people. Hanging up on your mom does not endear you to people.
Yeah.
He didn't do everything right, but stage presence and, you know, the production values of their events are still pretty damn good, you know?
Yeah.
Still, well, the biggest thing there was easily the biggest thing there was the announcement of Swift. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
Well, so Phil, you're really close to mobile development, obviously, with HyperIQ.
Yes.
And so the one thing that, and I even look at it too, that, you know, if I was going to be able to make an app that I wanted to do certain tasks that were not possible on iOS and then try to create a workaround, I'd be frustrated. But as a consumer and as somebody who's using the devices, and so I'm looking at ways to protect our home network. I'm looking at ways to protect our business network, our dedicated server with all the websites on it, yada, 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 you know, doing all of these things. And so I'm looking at sort of the scope of attacks that are happening and the amount of malware and phishing and all the things that are going on. And I have to tell you that at the end of the day, I really appreciate the sandboxing in iOS. And you know, on the one hand, I kind of rail against it because I don't want that to happen to the Mac, for example. But I totally understand because of where the world's going and the amount of attacks. And so I'd be curious about your perspective from that standpoint.
As far as the attacks?
No, as far as when you want to move forward on building out an app for a client, and the client says, hey, I want to do X, Y, and Z. And you look at them and say, well, you can do that on Android, but you can't do that on iOS.
Never said that. Have never said that.
Never been an issue?
Never been an issue.
Okay.
We always, you know, we can always figure some way of getting, you know,
achieving the objective,
achieving the ability and the goals that we want to. You know, there's a lot of times that we'll run into something that's like, it's not the same as Android, and it may not be as simple as Android, but it is very much doable. So in fact, a lot of times it's more stable on Apple. You know, we've talked about this in the past, the frustration with Android is not the ease of development, because the ease of development for Android is there, and the ease of submission and that sort of thing. But the frustration of multiple screen size, multiple devices, multiple versions of the Android software, that's the biggest problem. Yep. So a lot of times once you find the opportunity and find the answer on the iOS side, it tends to be a little more stable because it's a little more, I don't know how to say it. It's just easier to deal with, you know, one platform, one version. And, you know, everybody updates their Apple devices so religiously compared to the Android. But again, it's not the user's fault on the Android side. It's just the ability to get a hold of the latest version for your particular model.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, no, we really haven't had much problem. And we really enjoy, I enjoy working with Apple. Some of our larger clients have really good relationships with Apple. So that helps us out a lot as well.
Yeah.
Now you got to get some of the stock, Phil. That's
It's like $8 at, you know,
it's below $100 now.
What did my iOS guy, Josh Walker, looked across the desk at me the other day and said, oh my God, Apple lost 360% of their.
Yeah.
There was a funny piece in the Wall Street Journal. For those of you who woke up this morning and are clutching your chest, watching the reduction in Apple's, you know, stock price, you might want to check up on the 7-to-1 split that happened.
Hey, just to make sure that I'm not going insane, did anybody else hear that?
That was me.
Trumpet solo there.
That was me. Sorry.
Good.
Yeah. I missed that.
I thought maybe I was kind of losing it there.
No.
Oh my God. I'm in front of Louis Armstrong. What happened?
Where did that come from?
Speaking of alternative devices to Apple, Mozilla said in the next few months they're going to begin selling smartphones for as little as $25 in India and Indonesia. That is, I mean,
pretty amazing.
Are they going to be complete garbage, or is this going to be a fairly decent device?
Well,
and maybe it doesn't matter.
No, it probably doesn't. There isn't going to be a lot of apps, but in these developing countries, they just need basic functionality, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, so here's another OS for you, Phil. Firefox mobile operating system. You'll be...
I'm not jumping on that yet. Yeah. So.
Not quite yet.
Huh? Not quite yet. I'm going to be patient on this one.
But if you ever have a client come in that says our target market is rural people in India who make $25 a month, then you're going to be all over it.
That's right. That's right. Well, we'll see. We'll see if it gets adopted. I don't know. And then, who put this in here about Tesla? Because I got to tell you what.
I did.
So this article is about Tesla will use patents to subvert the patent system. Basically, they've opened up all their patents.
Yep.
Well, the kicker is, so I just bought 300 shares of Tesla stock. Mm. And it's gone down. Ah. And so then I read this thing about how all of the, and this was in the Wall Street Journal, all the most of the major automotive manufacturers in the world are swinging away from electric vehicles toward fuel cell technology because they don't believe in batteries, that the long-term future is in fuel cell technology, where you can drive up to a filling station and pump your hydrogen into the car and use the fuel cell in the car. And so I'm so torn because I see Elon Musk as the Steve Jobs of, you know, space and automotive and all of that. And I think this is a really smart move. But question is, do you think this is a move in desperation because of that swing away from EV?
I guess I've never looked at Elon Musk or anything that he does as anything that he does in desperation. I think he does it in commitment.
Okay.
Maybe that's just my idealized view of him. Again, I don't know him personally, but it seems to me that it's taking into account that the major automakers, you used to say Detroit, now it's just the major automakers, are sort of shying away from a technology that does not necessarily allow them a lot of aftermarket opportunity for servicing and things like that. So I think that if Musk can make it, that much easier for them to access the technology, then that brings the price down. I don't know. I don't necessarily look at it as desperation, as just furthering the cause. Am I living in an idealized world again, guys?
Well, I don't know. I'm sort of torn. I'm going back and forth because on the one hand, I want electronic vehicle, but on the other, I want the ability to, drive to Minot, North Dakota and see a cousin. And there may or may not be charging on the way. That's why I look at technologies like the Chevy Volt as being potentially right in the sweet spot of what people want, is that they can literally go anywhere because the little gas engine in there can be filled with gasoline and then you can charge the battery on the go. You don't get that great a mileage, but at least you can drive your electronic vehicle anywhere. And then when you're in town, even in the winter here, people are routinely getting 23 to 26 miles on an electric charge. And that's pretty good. If you could commute to work and then plug in and then drive home, probably wouldn't need any gas for a long time.
I still lost after the Model S. I'm sorry. I would love to have that
car.
Isn't
that beautiful?
Yeah. I would love to have that car.
Yeah. Well, a guy like you with your kind of money, you just write a check for $70,000 and it's yours.
Uh-huh. What you said.
No. Oh man.
I wish. All right. Thanks very much for thinking of me, but yeah, no, not going to happen. I did test drive a diesel this week, so I was.
What kind?
That VW Passat diesel, that TDI.
I hear it's awesome.
It's a nice car.
Great torque at the low end.
Hey, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
actually, it's not a zippy car by any means. So it doesn't. It's not quick, but that's okay.
So when I had my diesel, when I had my diesel Mercedes, the price delta between gas and diesel fuel was 60 to 80 cents.
Yeah, and it's about that now, I think.
Oh, is it? That's what I was just going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about that now. But I don't know. It was an interesting ride. And I didn't take the plunge this time simply because it's not the right timing. But it's interesting. I'm looking for ways. Ultimately, I would love to be in a hybrid of some kind or electric vehicle of some kind. But so far, I haven't really hit on, like the Prius is just a little too small for me.
You're a tall guy.
So. Although, if anybody wants to gift me a Tesla S, I'll gladly give you praises.
Well, all I can tell you is I drove, now granted, I didn't have the air conditioning on because it was so nice, but I drove to downtown St. Paul for a meeting. Then I left downtown St. Paul, drove to downtown Minneapolis for a meeting, and then drove back, and my average was 56 mpg, 56.2. And I was just absolutely blown away. You know, I wasn't even taking any special care.
That's not true. You always do. You know you're a hypermiler. Don't try to tell us otherwise.
Actually, when I do hypermile, one time I was going out to get Michelle at the airport, and I drove down Old Shakopee Road through Bloomington, and I'm doing the hypermiling thing, right? So I'm starting off really slowly from a light, you know, and I could just see people behind me like, what the hell? Come on, asshole. But when I got to the airport and I turned the engine off to wait for her on Post Road until she sends me a text message, I shut the engine off so I could see the readout.
Yeah.
And it was 74 mpg. Mm. Now, granted, I probably averaged, 28 miles an hour down Old Geography, but it was in the evening and there wasn't that much traffic.
So. You had nothing better to do.
Had nothing better to do. The dog's in the back hanging her head out the window. And so it was great.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, it's been a week and I'm kind of jonesing for a little bit of a security tip. Do you suppose we could get one?
Steve's security tip of the week.
No, wait a minute. What happened to the girl? What happened to the girl?
She took the day off. So we'll mix it up here a little bit.
Oh, mixing it up a little bit. There you go.
Now, I talked about this a while back, and I wanted to revisit it because they've made some changes. They're in beta with a new interface for the web.
Okay.
And it's the Prey project, which started off as an open source project to track stolen or misplaced computers. And then it branched into mobile devices. And it's now preyproject.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. But what it basically does is it allows you to device track your Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, or iOS device. Mm-hmm. And you can send the devices an alarm. So if it's in the house somewhere, you can send an alarm. You can send an alert message, if you're pretty sure it's been stolen. Hey, return this and I'll give you $100 or whatever. Or if you just report it stolen, you can track it by location. It works fabulously with a laptop, not so much with a mobile device, because if the device is not actively being used, either Android or iOS, then you can't track its location. Unlike Find My iPhone or Find My iPad with Apple's technology, you are able to, just as long as the device is turned on, you can track it. The kicker is on the Android side, again, this gets into the more openness of Android. As long as the Android device is on, just turned on, you can track it. And so what they say is, you know, if you basically, if you've got an iOS or a Windows mobile device, you have to leave the password off and let people actively use it in order to track it. I thought, that's not a good solution. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, but it's really fabulous because Prey creates reports. And so, you know, like for example, with the computer version, and it would do this with the camera on iOS or Android as well on a mobile device, but it'll show you the, it'll report on the IP address of the thief or geolocation if it's a mobile device, take photos of him or her, report the activity, and take screenshots of what they're doing. And it's really cool. And I've tested it extensively, and it works great. Mm-hmm. It's free for... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, do you ever feel uncomfortable with the fact that... and I know you there's a lot of trust involved in anything you do in the security field because, you know, you are loading software onto your machine for Prey to actually access that machine on behalf of yourself. But that also means that they can access on behalf of themselves or others.
Or they could have a backdoor in it
to allow. That sort of thing. Does that ever concern you, overly concern you? Because I think about it a lot. You know, what, especially because I use a lot of these products myself. It's like, you know, just the other day I was, you know, I had to use Avast to find my phone. And I think, you know, if I can find it.
Yeah. Well, so what's interesting is the answer is yes, but.
Yeah.
And here's the but.
Yes.
I installed Little Snitch. I bought and licensed a Little Snitch, and it's a Mac utility that basically shows you every internet connection that the machine wants to make.
And it also allows you to download software that you're not supposed to download, I believe, right? Isn't that what Little Snitch was really designed for?
No, it's not actually. No. But what it does, and it's a pain in the ass for the first, you know, 5 days that you use it because you're constantly allowing or denying access, you know, so you're on a web page and you start to load it and it's asking to connect up to all these different ad sites and so on. You just say no. And so you can permanently delete something or whatever. But anyway, the punchline is, and the reason I'm bringing up Little Snitch is the fact that Prey Project does not do anything at all. It's not phoning home at all unless I specifically go in and say, find the device, find the location
that, you know,
then it, well, no, because 100% of anything going out from my machine is Little Snitch will tell me what it is. You know, it'll say, do you want to allow this to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see 100% of all of my outgoing traffic unless Little Snitch is compromised. And then, you know what? If all this stuff happens, you know, I'm going to go build a little cabin in the woods,
write your
and
manifesto.
Grow my beard, do my manifesto, and be done with it. And then I'll invite you to come. You can come and visit.
We'll
and then
out.
Graham can show up with my extra tinfoil hat.
There you go.
And we'll have a little
God
party.
Yeah.
And we'll furtively look out the window. Just to make sure no one's sneaking up on the cabin.
So just with listening devices. Just a little glimpse into Steve's future.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Security tip. Thanks for the security tip, Uncle Steve.
You're so welcome.
Yeah. All right. So what do you got for upcoming events? I wanted to note that we postponed the Mobile Twin Cities meeting that was scheduled for this month until next month. We're in the midst of a change of venue. So
You are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
A month off?
We're going to have to change our calendars.
Yes, we are.
Doggone it. Okay, good. Yep. We'll hack for MN Nerdery on next Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday. Yes. Actually, I would just love to go there and just hang out, but unfortunately, I've got grad parties both days to go to. What?
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say I'm up north next weekend, so I can't catch it either. But anyway, it'll be great.
Then that business formation employment issues event is?
Yeah, at the Treehouse, the first networking event. It'll be kind of fun. Free drinks and refreshments will draw plenty of folks, I'm sure.
Yep.
And a couple of good presentations for those contemplating a startup or wanting to find out what things do I need to know to, you know, start a business and start hiring people. And, you know, trying to avoid some of the problems you can run into if you don't know what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yep, that should be good. It seems like there are some other things coming up in the near future here, too, but I'm blanking on what they are right now. We could probably fill in a few more things. But
well, we'll stick some, if we find them here in the next half hour, we'll stick them in the show notes.
But we are coming into the vacation season as we approach July 4th, certainly. And I know a lot of people take time off and there won't be a lot of events perhaps in July.
Oh, but, you know what? Speaking of that, you guys, we did not at all stop and contemplate the fact that today is Flag Day.
Oh,
we're recording this on Flag Day.
Hey,
and I just wanted to point that out because, just because it was on my calendar.
Well, good.
You know, no other reason.
It makes me want to get out and fly the flag on the front of the house. Now, you always have to wonder, should you do that in the rain? You're not supposed to, you know, have a flag in the rain. I always wonder, what should I do?
But I don't know.
I'll figure it out.
I don't know.
Flag Day.
Well, and fun fact to know and tell, in the Wikipedia article, Stony Hill School in Wabaca, Wisconsin was Wabaca, W-A-U-B-E-K-A.
Oh, okay.
Was the site of the first formal observance of Flag Day.
Oh, be darned.
And when
the things you learn on the Men of Hate Gang podcast.
I know. Well, it's not only incredible. That,
well, and fun fact to know and tell. So we were living in Chicago and I was a Republican at that point. And I remember stopping in Ripon, Wisconsin, which is the birthplace of the Republican Party, and having my photo taken next to the school where the little school where the birthplace was and all that.
Holding your Molotov cocktail.
I know a graduate of that college.
Hey, I was a Republican. I consider myself a Republican until probably, maybe January of 2012. When stuff started to change after 9/11, in some very bad ways, I thought. Anyway, and so then I swung the other way, and now I'm swinging back to the middle, and may go a little right as I get older. I don't know, and who knows?
That's it. Don't want to hear that.
Except I was just called at a party last Saturday night. The reason we love him is because he's a flaming liberal. He's like, there you what? Go. What? Me? No. You can't say that.
Flaming liberal.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't call you that.
Yeah. It's just because I argue the other side.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a centrist.
I'm a centrist. Right. Okay.
All right. Well, listen, there'll be all sorts of things to talk about next week, you know, in the world of Minnesota innovation, and we'll cover it on
the Minnovate Gang podcast.
Yes, we will.
All right. Take care.
Okay, guys. Have a
good see ya.
Tonight I'm going Deep inside.